Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Director's Box podcast. I'm Kev. I'm joined, as always, by Craig Gill. Craig, how are you doing, mate?
Very well, thanks, Kevin. And you?
Yeah, can't complain. Brilliant week of football that we've experienced, and we will go through most of the best bits over the course of this podcast. We will also look back at the Champions League, and we'll have a little look ahead to big weekend at the bottom of the Premier League and two FA Cup semi-finals as we find out who will compete for the final domestic piece of silverware for the season next month. But before we do all of that, Wrexham were promoted from League Two over the weekend. And Craig, they're a big club in big news topic within football these days, aren't they? Because of their two high-profile owners, the acting pair of Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney. They're obviously well-funded, Wrexham. They've gone back-to-back promotions now out of the National League, where it took them a little while to get out, it has to be said, straight through League Two at the first time of asking. And I think the consensus is they're not going to finish yet. Before we touch on the owners as a whole, I mean, how far can that sort of celebrity ownership sort of model, how far in English football these days do you think it can take them? As I said, the consensus is generally that they're going to breeze through League One. It's not one that I necessarily disagree with, but at some point they're going to come up against sort of money-making, huge sort of clubs that are just money machines, really. So how far can these two guys take Wrexham, do you think?
Well, personally, I think they can take them into the Premier League. You know, League One is, as Portsmouth and Derby and Bolton are finding out, is not an easy league to get out of. So that's not a given in my mind, even though they're promoted out of the National League last season, and obviously then this promotion this season out of League Two. So it won't be easy, but of course, if you have the budget whereby you can go out and get better players, then obviously that's gonna help. And then it's whether that team then with new players can gel and perform on a week-to-week basis to gain enough points to get promoted into the Championship. The Championship, we've seen teams come out of the Championship on not massive budgets. Use your team example, obviously Luton Town.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're going to go. I don't think they'll have too many problems going through League One. I think they might have done a few years ago when there was a salary cap introduced in League One, but the salary cap's been done away with now. So that in itself is going to help them naturally. They can spend what they want on wages. They can spend what they want on player transfer fees. They've pretty much got free rein to, if you want, for the want of a better term, buy their way out of League One. My kind of concern would come with regards to they're going to have an overhaul of their squad, aren't they? That's not to say that their squad's not necessarily good enough right now, but they're going to be playing a lot more high-profile matches than what they will have done in League Two. With no disrespect to League Two, there was probably ever only three or four teams at the start of the season that were ever going to get sort of promoted. That kind of doubles, if not slightly higher, in League One. For example, there's going to be one of Derby, Bolton and Barnsley who aren't going to get promoted. Only a maximum of two of those can possibly go up. So one of those sides are going to be challenging Wrexham. Then coming down the other way, you've got big clubs looking like they could make the trapdoor out of the Championships. You've got Sheffield Wednesday potentially coming down. Obviously, I don't think Rotherham are necessarily in this conversation, although Steve Evans got a good record in League One. He's just been recruited there. I just get the impression that while I fully expect them to be in the mix, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if they get promoted straight out of League One, like you, I don't think it's automatic. Of course, there's one less promotion spot as well, which is another thing to sort of come up against. But at the same time, they've just got the money that if it all falls into place, if all the signings that they make, and they will need to make signings. I mean, the likes of James McLean, Stephen Fletcher, the experienced kind of players that they've got have made their way down to that level because they're just probably teetering on the edge of maybe not being good enough for the very top of League One. So I think they do need to make some signings. So if they all gel, I think they'll be absolutely fine. But it wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing in the world, Craig, if they do take a couple of years to get out, because I think they've got big plans for the stadium and the surrounding areas, the training ground and everything else. And if they're going to go right the way through to the Premier League, then these are the things that have to be in place. You mentioned my club, Luton. One of the biggest things that Luton did on their ascent through the leagues was sort their training ground out. It was absolutely amateurish at the start of their run from the National League right the way through. And now it's a world-class facility. I think if you want to attract the best players or the players that are going to get you out of levels 3 and 2, you really, really need a training ground where they're going to improve both within their coaching and also within their not just their coaching, but also the environment, the culture that they get. And I just think that that's a really big thing. So, yeah, I don't know what you think on that, mate.
Yes, it certainly helps, Kevin. Obviously, you know, it's the environment, the training environment, the day-to-day environment, the more conducive you can make that to a high-performance piece, obviously, the better. And you know, that will perhaps have a bearing on the type of player that you attract or can attract. I know Wrexham have been in a partnership with the Racecourse Stadium with the local university there. And they also had a training ground at Colliers Park, which I believe was either leased or sold to the Football Association of Wales, which now use that as a North Wales training centre for their regional and national squads, both male, female, and at youth level as well. So I'm not sure whether or not they still use that. So that would be an interesting one to look at as well. But yes, obviously, you know, the better facilities you have, both training and playing, potentially the better the environment, and then obviously that then hopefully would foster success with quality players and quality coaching.
And of course, the further that they go up the leagues, they're going to encounter PSR rules. You know, we know all about that from this season. So it's not just about going up with 11 or even 22 fantastic players. You need a whole infrastructure. And to be fair to these two owners at Wrexham, I went to Wrexham a lot of times during our non-league days, and that ground was run down, for the want of a better phrase. Certainly, three of the sides, or two of the sides at the very least, there's a brand new stand. It's not brand new now, obviously, but there was at the time, down one side of the ground. One of the sides behind the goal was decent enough, certainly for the conference level, but, you know, as you go through the leagues, probably needs renovation. But to be fair to them, there was a derelict terrace behind the goal, wasn't there, that hadn't been used for an awful long time. They've now put, I think it's seating in there or terracing. Either way, it's now open to fans. So that's the first thing that they've done. So they've done really well already with what they've got with the club in terms of its infrastructure, their building. They're clearly not just here for some fun and games and a TV series and a documentary and everything else. They are building it up in the right way. It feels like it will be sustainable in time. I don't think it is now, but I don't think where they built from, it could ever have been sustainable at the level that they were at. I think they had to initially take some hits on the chin, so to speak, some losses in order to kind of get the ball rolling, which they seem to have done. They might not be able to break even in League One because, again, a lot of it will depend on this infrastructure that they're going to need to keep on building. But in time, I can see they would be sustainable. Where, of course, they're going to have a massive advantage, certainly next season in League One, and maybe even in the Championship as well. The pull of these guys is huge. They can pull in huge sponsorship deals that, you know, with no disrespect, the likes of Cheltenham Town, Fleetwood Town, even Rotherham United in the Championship, they're never, ever going to see the kind of sponsorship revenue that these two guys could do at Wrexham. So they've kind of got a leg up on the field from that point of view. But I just like the way that they're steadily building it. And yes, they're running at losses, but sometimes you just have to accept that football clubs can't make a profit.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you mentioned the facilities there, and, you know, I think it's the Kop End that has been demolished. And they have put temporary seating there. So that fills up one end, obviously, on a temporary basis until I think we're waiting for planning permission, I believe. But yeah, I played at the Racecourse too many years ago in the Welsh Cup when the four Football League Welsh teams could compete in that competition: Swansea, Cardiff, Newport and Wrexham, and it was definitely run down then. And you can see with the addition of that new stand, which I think the university might have built, and you know the ongoing work then at the COP, you can see that they're definitely investing in the club and investing in the local community as well. They do some marvellous work, I believe, in the local community. With various, you know, sponsorship events of local clubs, etc., and community charities, and I think they've even got a welcome to Wrexham sign up on the hill there, very similar to the one in Hollywood. Yeah, they clearly are there for the good of the community, not just the football club, and they clearly are investing. And they've said, you know, they want to take this as far as they can, and hopefully, you know, it'll continue for many more years to come.
Yeah, I saw an interview with them. I think it was a couple of weeks ago that they said that they want to build a sustainable football club, and I think that's fair enough, and I think we have to judge them on that. Not necessarily right now, when everything's built, when their squad's built, when all of their infrastructure is built and everything else, then we have to judge them. As I said, they're going to be massively helped out by sponsorship opportunity. Next season the Football League has got a huge new TV deal, which is going to showcase more games in League One, so naturally they'll be able to sell more sponsorship off of the back of that, because let's be honest, TV companies are going to go for where the TV ratings are, and whether you're a Wrexham fan or whether you're one of these people who hates Wrexham because of the ownership that they've got, because of the jealousy, because, you know, they've got great owners, whereas everyone else is having to tread incrementally. Whatever happens, you'll tune into a Wrexham game, either as a Wrexham fan to see them win or as a fan of the other 23 clubs in the division in the hope that they lose. So more Wrexham fans are going to be on television next season. So the sponsorship revenue that they could have driven beforehand is only going to increase, and of course they're up another level as well. These guys can bring in serious money that, to be quite honest, most championship clubs aren't going to be able to bring in through sponsorship alone.
Yeah, most definitely so. And you know, it reminds me of when Swansea went from the fourth division straight through to the old first division under John Toshack. I'm sure the budget at Swansea certainly wasn't anything like you know, the top clubs, maybe even in, you know, League Division 3, Division 2, or certainly the First Division. And at one stage, I think just before Christmas, Swansea topped the old First Division. And it wasn't until the last couple of months that they fell away and ended up finishing sixth in their first season in the First Division. So it just shows that it can be done. And sometimes it doesn't have to be done by spending millions, albeit, obviously, it's a completely different market now. And you would think with their ongoing investment and the support from the local community, obviously I think they sell out every home game, as you probably expect now. I think it makes for a great story, and I think those that are jealous just wish that the two Hollywood stars had approached their club and not Wrexham.
That's exactly it in a nutshell, isn't it? And I can understand why teams or fans of teams in the National League in particular will have been frustrated. There's only one gets out of that by automatic right. And, you know, when someone's come along and they're ploughing in money like these boys are at Wrexham, I can understand why, you know, if you're a club that's been down there 5-10 years, you're a bit miffed that they've suddenly come along. But they're out of the way now. You've got no, you know, nothing to worry about. There will be a time where these boys slow down, where Wrexham's ascent through the league slow down. That's just natural. The money is very top heavy in this country. If they do get into the championship, they're going to face three sides that have got parachute payments, for example. Now, even these two guys under the PSR rules can't live with parachute payments. So there will be a time where it slows down. That's not to say they can't get to where they want to get to. But if you're out there thinking Wrexham are going to get promoted next season and the season after and be a Premier League team in 25-26, that's probably not. Sorry, 26-27, that's probably not realistic. They are going to hit a buffer at some point. That's not to say that they won't then climb over it at some point. But that buffer will be in their way. It's just the way that the football pyramid, the money and the lack of it filtering its way down. These guys have got money where they can jump over it right now. Where do you stand on these kind of high-profile owners, though, Craig? It can only be good for football, can't it? Particularly, I actually think in the lower leagues it's really good for football. I remember when Luton were in the conference, every Luton away game felt like a Luton home game, because Luton travelled in superior numbers to everywhere else. So, you know, I'm just picking out two at random. So Braintree and Hyde. Luton played both of those games. Now, I remember going to Hyde specifically, just outside Manchester, huge catchment area. With the best will in the world, Hyde United aren't going to attract massive crowds. So Luton went to Hyde United, and the crowd that day was 3,500, of which predictably, they opened the stadium up for Luton fans. 3,200 or so were Luton fans. Ditto Braintree as well. And it's the same for Wrexham. They've got huge support. So just having the having Wrexham, these high-profile owners in the lower divisions, if clubs have been sensible at how they've priced it and how they've opened it up to Wrexham fans and things, they've had a good payday out of these guys. So it's not necessarily a bad thing for the clubs that are involved. But it can't be bad for football, can it? Having high-profile individuals. I'm not talking necessarily nation-states. That's a different topic entirely. But high-profile celebrities who do it the right way, like these two guys are doing. And I'll use JJ Watt as well at Burnley, who's invested into Burnley. Huge American football player, probably the most recognisable defensive American football player that there is in the, you know, in the current era. Having these guys involved in our game and wanting to showcase our game to a new market, particularly in America, can't be a bad thing, can it?
I think if it's done the right way, yes. I think it can be a good thing. And clearly, the two owners at Wrexham have approached it that way. But we also know of examples whereby big foreign ownership has come in with big money and failed. Or they've come in with big promises and not delivered. You know, they've cut right back on the budget and not made signings. And the team has sort of stagnated almost. You know, the club has stagnated potentially. So I think there's good and bad in everything, isn't there? You know, but I just think with the Wrexham story, it's a great story. They clearly are investing in the community as well as the football club, as I've said. And of course, it's got a knock-on effect. Of course, it will. You know, as you just mentioned, great example there. You know, of Luton in the National League. Wrexham obviously have good following wherever they go, especially on the back of the recent success as well. So that then bolsters you know, away attendances as well. And of course, it highlights. The particular league that they're in. You know, the National League probably had more publicity that season that they got promoted than they had done for some years. Similar League Two this season. So I guess that can only be good for the game as well.
Yeah, and of course, there's a streaming model in the EFL as well. Fans from anywhere across the world can pay to stream a certain game, particularly midweek games. So clubs are making money through them that way. So yeah, it's a really interesting thing. Certainly with these two guys with Wrexham, I wish them the best until they come up against Luton, of course. Hopefully we're a few seasons away from that. No disrespect to them. Like you say, investment in the community. I think you can tell a bad owner from a good owner straight away just by the interest they have in the community, can't you? And these guys, ever since they've gone in there, they seem to have had the community at heart. They've taken to the community. You see on their social media posts, which is another thing that attracts so much attention. I mean, these guys are followed by millions and millions and millions of people on social media, which is where the world revolves these days. It's just massive that to have two guys who are from a different sort of industry who are so interested in football and just showcasing our game to bigger and wider people. You're absolutely right. Rogue owners, we don't want anything to do with any of those. And what's going on at Reading now is the opposite end of the scale. But if you've got a good one, then I just think that they should be sort of applauded, not kind of ridiculed. And I understand why other clubs ridicule them and things like that. But your club's got some benefit out of these boys being there as well.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
That's Wrexham. And congratulations to them for winning promotion at the weekend. They were not the only ones that got promoted out of League Two at the weekend, though, Craig, because we've seen the title one over the course of the weekend with Stockport County winning the title on Tuesday night with an absolute crazy game. 5-2 win over Notts County. And, of course, we've also seen over the course of the week that Mansfield Town have been promoted as well. So huge congratulations to everyone concerned there, particularly Stockport County, who themselves are only a year further into League Two than what Wrexham were. They've got promoted, they've won the title, and all three of those will be lining up in League One next season. And as we also know, Portsmouth have won the League One title. They will be playing Championship football next season. And that's quite right too, because they are far too big a club to be playing at League One. So huge congratulations go to all of those, Craig. All well deserved on their great seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the old story, isn't it? The table doesn't lie. And clearly, you know, to have gone so far in 40-odd games and finished in the top three, then it's clearly there on merit and the strength of the squad and, you know, and the qualities of the management staff and coaches.
Commiserations whilst we're at it to Forest Green, who have lost their Football League status. They went down at the weekend, and they will be back in the National League, having climbed out of there a few seasons ago. Steve Cottrell, he probably arrived too late to save them, really, Craig.
Yeah, I think so. He had the initial impact, didn't he? But then they fell away in certain games. Obviously disappointing for him. And I know he spoke after the 6-0 loss at Wrexham. You can see how bitterly disappointed he was. But sometimes the coach, you know, you're only as good as your players, and you can prepare as best as you can throughout the week and set a team up with a game plan. But ultimately, it's the players that have to execute that. And if one or two have an off day, then, you know, it's almost written in the stars that you're probably not going to be as successful as if you've got all 11 players firing all cylinders.
Yep, indeed. National League football, it is for Forest Green next season. And of course, they'll be replaced, as we already knew, by Chesterfield. Let's look back at some other football that's taken place since we were last doing a podcast, Craig. And in particular, we have to touch on the Champions League quarterfinals. I mean, we thought we were looking at Manchester City, Arsenal, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid to go through. And, well, what do we know? Because who's gone through? Paris Saint-Germain, Dortmund, Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. I'll start with the two games that involve the two English clubs. First of all, particularly Manchester City, Real Madrid. That had to be one of the more one-sided beatings of a 1-1 draw that I've seen in a while. Probably from the moment that Real Madrid took the lead to the moment that full-time and extra time was blown, that felt like a training ground exercise of, we're not coming out of our own half. Can you score two goals against us? And they couldn't do it.
It was very much attack versus defence, wasn't it? Yeah, you know, Real Madrid in not even a mid-block, a low block probably, you know, defending the edge of the 18-yard box. Manchester City, as they do, moving the ball well, trying to find spaces and opportunities to cross from the goal line, which is their trademark. Obviously, cut back crosses into the second six-yard box. Yeah, but to no avail, obviously. And yeah, as you say, hence, you know, it went to penalties. But obviously, after De Bruyne had scored and equalised, fairly late on, but then of course he had a golden opportunity then, didn't he, almost from a similar incident, which was a cross, I think it was about 12 yards out, and unfortunately and uncharacteristically for him, he ballooned it over the bar, and of course that would have been the winner. Went to penalties, and as you say, yeah, the rest is history.
Really weird though, because about 7 or 8 minutes from the end of extra time, De Bruyne went off, Kovacic came on. Halfway through extra time, or in fact, I think it was at the start of extra time, Haaland went off. Okay, Julian Alvarez came on. But you'd have thought that game looked like it was destined for penalty, certainly at the time that De Bruyne got taken off. I raised my eyebrow or two when that happened. And, you know, lo and behold, if De Bruyne was there, would he have scored the penalty? We don't know. But it was Edison who took the fifth penalty. So when you're relying on your goalkeeper in what you would call the mandatory penalties, something's gone somewhere, something wrong somewhere along the line. Just a couple of weird decisions, really, that altered the sort of course of that game.
Yeah, you'd certainly think that De Bruyne and Haaland would be certainly in the top five penalty takers, potentially, in that Manchester City squad, given the way that they both strike the ball. But, you know, addressing the Edison issue, I mean, you know, what a great strike of the ball he is. I mean, his distribution out from the back is, you know, at times as good, if not better, than his back four, you know, or his back three. So I can see why he was chosen to take it. And actually, you know, he struck it with his side foot. So he didn't actually use his legs. He struck it with his side foot. And the power he generated from that into the corner was, very impressive.
It was indeed. Yeah, and we should also note the Real Madrid goalkeeper must listen to this podcast, Craig, because when we discussed the Wales penalties a few weeks ago, we said if a goalkeeper stands still, he is going to save a penalty. And he did. He stood still and Bernardo Silva straight into his lap. And I just couldn't help but think of what we said. He must have had an earpiece on that time or something, because it was almost telepathic. He just stood still and there it was. The one time he didn't dive, he dived for all the other penalties. The one time he didn't dive and the ball lands right for him to catch. It was ironic, really, wasn't it?
It was. Well, I was watching the penalties with my friend Joe, and I was referring to our conversation, actually, about goalkeeper standing still. So it was quite ironic that yeah, keeper stood still, and Bernardo Silva sort of, you know, panenked it right into his hands, really.
Yeah. Let's touch on the Arsenal game. I think we thought Bayern Munich probably were hardly harshed on by in the first game with that penalty decision, but they made up for it in the second one. Very, very flat performance from Arsenal. I have to say, I didn't see all of this game. We still didn't get the split screen or indeed the split kickoff times that we spoke about last week. So I was literally flicking between the sort of two. So I didn't see all of it, but the bits that I did see of the Arsenal game, they were very, very flat. And in the end, Joshua Kimmich got in front of his defender, buried a header, and from that moment onwards, Arsenal didn't really look like they were going to get back into the tie.
No, it was most unlike Arsenal performance, really, wasn't it? And, you know, unlike them, they didn't create that many clear opportunities. And by the same token, obviously, full credit to Bayern Munich for, you know, shutting them out and getting through the tie.
Much to the pleasure of Eric Dier and Harry Kane, I am sure. Not sure Spurs fans should be celebrating too much, though, because that's probably your chances of Champions League football next season taking a heavy dent unless you can overcome Aston Villa, because there aren't going to be five English spots anymore, although Aston Villa have done English clubs a slight favour by winning a very weird penalty shootout themselves on Thursday night, Craig. Just very, very quickly touch on that. Emiliano Martinez, well, he was in goal, then he was sent off, and then, I mean, all hell broke loose, and then eventually he's put back in goal, and then, of course, he knew once he was put back in goal he was going to save a penalty that ultimately got Villa over the line.
Yeah, it did. It was a strange one, wasn't it? Because he'd been booked in the first half after about 30 minutes, I think, for time wasting. So he was shown the yellow card then. Then after the first penalty, I think the ball went over into the crowd. He was gesturing to the crowd. The referee took that as, you know, unsporting behaviour, I think. Showed him the yellow card. Must have checked his card, realised that he'd booked him, obviously, so early on in the game that he'd forgotten he'd booked him. And then seemed to rescind the yellow card and obviously then rescind the sending off to allow him back in the goal for the remainder of the penalty. So, yeah, never seen that before, to be honest with you. The yellow card rescinded, other than, of course, through VAR, clearly. But, yeah, really, really strange one. But, you know, full credit to Villa. You know, I was very impressed by Lille, I must say. Really took the game to Villa in the second leg, particularly. And but it's great to see Villa go through. I think they were saying on commentary that it's their first European semi-final since 1982. You know, and of course, you know, around that period, they won the European League, which is now obviously the European Cup, I should say, which is now, of course, the Champions League.
Indeed, yeah. And of course, Unai Emery loves a European trophy, doesn't he? Wouldn't be at all surprising if Villa go on and win that. The other two Champions League quarterfinals, real surprising turnaround. I was going to say at the Nou Camp, but of course, Barcelona aren't playing at the Nou Camp this season, are they? The Olympic Stadium in that part of the world. Some crazy goings on again with red cards in that game. PSG took full advantage and made their way through. Kylian Mbappe, of course, right behind most of that, ahead of his move potentially to Real Madrid in the summer, if rumours are to be believed. And Borussia Dortmund, they also came from behind in their tie to see off Atletico Madrid, and it will be PSG against Dortmund in one of the semi-finals. And we could yet have the German Der Klassiker final at Wembley Stadium the first weekend of June. What did you make of those two, Craig? Real good comeback from PSG, to be fair.
Yeah, PSG did ever so well, Kevin, didn't they? With 3-2 down after the first leg, you know, turned the second leg round totally, winning that 4-1 to winning 6-4 on aggregate. So, yeah, great performance. Mbappe scoring two, three red cards for the Barcelona group. Obviously, with the sending off in the first half, then Xabi got sent off, and then the goalkeeping coach got sent off as well. So, three red cards. Great performance and a great win for Paris Saint-Germain. But as you said, you know, our predictions went out the window, really, and as did probably a lot of people's, I would imagine. But very much looking forward to the semi-finals.
Indeed, yes. They take place next month. Yeah, if you've got all four semi-finalists after those first legs of the quarterfinals, well done to you. And may I suggest buying a ticket to the lottery this Saturday, because you might have every chance of winning it. That's for sure. That's our look back at the week that's just gone. Let's have a little look at the week that's to come, Craig, before we conclude this podcast. And I think we need to touch on the Premier League, and we need to touch on the bottom part of the Premier League. Of course, the Premier League this weekend decimated because we've got the FA Cup semi-finals. We'll come on to them FA Cup semi-finals shortly, because each one of them looks uniquely good. But if you look at the bottom half of the Premier League and the bottom six in particular, Craig, all six teams play against each other this weekend. It's going to be all changed down at the bottom. And you probably need to talk more about this than me, because I'm already nervous just thinking about it without talking about it. But you have Luton against Brentford. So Luton third from bottom, Brentford sixth from bottom. Brentford currently 7 points above Luton. Obviously, a Luton win brings Brentford right back into the equation. Were Brentford to win, that's them safe pretty much. 10 points clear of Luton with four to go, and that's not getting recovered. So huge game there. And then we have the two sides immediately above Luton, both within reach of Luton, it has to be said, playing each other on Sunday afternoon. Everton host Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest a point above Luton on level games. Everton 2 points above Luton with a game in hand, albeit that game in hand is the Merseyside derby next week, so they probably can't rely too much on getting anything from that game. So that's an absolutely massive game, particularly in light of the fact that Everton have just been spanked 6-0 by Chelsea on Monday night. And if that's not enough for you at the bottom of the table, Craig, well, the bottom two fancy a bit of a meeting as well at Bramall Lane, as Sheffield United, who are surely drinking in the last orders part of the last chance saloon, they play host to Burnley, and Burnley could give themselves a right shot in the arm here, given that the side that they're chasing, Nottingham Forest, could drop points at the weekend. If Burnley can win that game, that brings them right back into the equation. It's a huge weekend at the bottom of the table.
It's massive, isn't it? And you know, the Premier League computer, who would have thought of it? You know, when it came up with these fixtures at this stage of the season as well. So yeah, all to play for, all six teams. It's going to be fascinating, actually. And for once, the focus is going to be on the bottom six as opposed to the top six and the European race, obviously. Fascinating, really. Who would be brave enough to call any of those results, potentially? Luton at home, you know, present company accepted. You know, they are very strong at home. You have been very strong at home this season. And the top teams that you've run so close, and unfortunately just been, you know, beaten just before the final whistle. There have been several examples of that. Some great results, both home and away as well. So, you know, I know that Luton definitely will be up for the fight for that one. And they actually get my vote for that. You might be pleased to hear. So I see Luton winning that one. Everton Forest, that's going to be another tight one as well. You would imagine, wouldn't you, coming off the back of the 6-0 defeat last week, that Sean Dyche has really got amongst his troops there, and would expect nothing else other than a performance for Everton. So I'm going to go for Everton in that one. Sheffield United, you know, a bit of an enigma, really. They can get results. Burnley have had some good results recently. I can think of the 2-2 draw at Chelsea, for example. I can see that one playing out as a draw, potentially. So that's my forecast, Kev. And you?
Pass. No, I am. So on your forecast, then, the weekend ends with Luton outside the bottom three. Well, it does anyway. If you're right about the Luton win, Luton are out of the bottom three, regardless of what happens in the other two games, because obviously Everton and Nottingham Forest play each other. I do agree with you. I do think this is a good chance for Luton to win. Luton are very good at Kenilworth Road. They've known all along that form at Kenilworth Road is paramount to keeping them up. And they've also known that their last four games at Kenilworth Road, Bournemouth, who Luton won 2-1 in the last minute a couple of weeks ago, Brentford, Everton, Fulham. So Luton knew all along those four home games have to yield 10 points if they want to stay in the Premier League. And I think Rob Edwards will have Luton up for that. That's not to say Brentford will be pushovers, but something weird is going on at Brentford, Craig, and we might need to touch on it between now and the end of the season. Ivan Toney's been benched for the last two games for a team who aren't safe from relegation yet. There's something happening there. We'll save it for another day, but it just gives me the sort of impression that Luton can get over the line in that one. And I hope I'm right, Cord. I really hope I'm right. I think you're right. There's no way Everton can be as bad as they were on Monday night. They were atrocious. They were absolutely, they were terrible from start to finish. I mean, even a reliable performer like Jordan Pickford chose the worst day ever to have an absolute shocker. He pushed two goals straight back into the path of the guys who eventually scored them. And of course, completely fluffed the kick straight to Cole Palmer. If there's one person in the Premier League right now you don't want to present an open goal to, he's probably high up on the list, Cole Palmer. They're going to be better. I'm just not convinced they're any good. That's my worry for Everton. You look recently, their last two performances, they've drawn against Newcastle with a very, very soft penalty when, for some unknown reason, the Newcastle fella got Dominic Calvert-Lewin in a headlock in the box. And to be fair to Calvert-Lewin, and then the second one, they beat Burnley 1-0, but the Burnley keeper drove the ball straight into Calvert-Lewin, straight back over his head and in the back of the net. They're not convincing me at all, Everton. I wouldn't be surprised if Forest get some sort of result there. Whether they're good enough to win, I don't know. They look like a side who, probably because of the points deductions and everything else, they're kind of finding the pressure a lot. But I do think, I always think at this stage of the season, and this is one of the reasons why I like Luton in this game, the best player on the pitch will inspire his team to get a result. So in the Luton game, I think the best player on the pitch is Ross Barkley. And I think he'll inspire Luton to get a result. And I think the best player on the pitch at Goodison Park on Sunday will be Morgan Gibbs-White. And I think he'll encourage them to get a result. And then with the other one, Burnley-Sheffield United, I have a funny feeling Sheffield United might get a result there. But who knows with Burnley? I mean, their goalkeeping situation is a mess. But can you really trust Sheffield United? I don't know. Either way, if Luton win, I think both are down anyway.
Yeah, I think you could be right. A friend of mine, Mick, is a big Burnley fan, and you'll obviously be looking for a Burnley victory at Sheffield United at the weekend. But that one could well play out as a draw, couldn't it? You know, as I say, given Sheffield United's sort of erratic form, if you like. Fascinating three fixtures, and I'll certainly be glued to either the radio or some form of online media to keep abreast of those results over the weekend, for sure.
Yep, you can guarantee that I'll have no fingernails when you see me for this podcast next week. They'll all have gone on Saturday afternoon, that's for sure. But yeah, really big game, really big weekend at the bottom of the Premier League. And we're going to find out a little bit more about who will stay and who won't stay in the Premier League this season come sort of 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon. That's for sure. We're also going to find out, Craig, who is going to compete in the FA Cup final this season too. Very different semi-finals in prospect, I think it's fair to say. If there were winners of that Champions League tie between Man City and Real Madrid on Wednesday night, it wasn't just Real Madrid, because Chelsea would have been sat there absolutely licking their lips at the fact that Manchester City went to extra time and penalties less than 3 days before they take each other on at Wembley Stadium on Saturday afternoon. That's off the back of Chelsea winning 6-0 against Everton. This has got the most obvious storyline you're ever going to get, with Cole Palmer's just scored 4 goals against Everton, and now he takes on the club who he left earlier on in this season and could deprive them of defending the FA Cup. It's written in the stars that he's going to have some sort of influence on this opening semi-final.
Well, it would be some headline, wouldn't it? You know, him doing the job on his old team. Yeah, I think this is going to be a great game. Man City obviously licking their wounds after the Champions League defeat. I don't know. Even though they got knocked out in the week, you know, you saw the way they played against Real Madrid during the week, and in fact they were both legs, and it really does take something to bet against them, doesn't it? And if we're talking about erratic teams and erratic performances, I mean, there's no better example than that than Chelsea this season. You know, dropping points against teams they probably shouldn't be dropping points against, and an emphatic 6-0 victory in the week, as you said. You know, Palmer getting his hat trick. Wouldn't it be some story if he was to come pop up with a winner at whatever stage of the game? But I'm still going to go for Man City on that one. I think they've got too much strength in depth. I think they'll be out for revenge after getting knocked out of the Champions League, and of course it's another potential and another piece of silverware for them to add to their already great collection over recent years.
Yeah, I've got Man City in that one too. I was at the Etihad last Saturday I saw Luton put up a pretty decent defensive showing and they still scored five. So that just goes to show the sort of quality that they've got. And Phil Foden never even saw the pitch that day. So, yeah, they've got ridiculous quality. And, yeah, wounded animal springs to mind with regards to Manchester City. The other game, Sunday afternoon, is probably the more interesting one, isn't it, for the romantics of the FA Cup, as Coventry City take on Manchester United. You have to go back, what, 37 years, don't you, for Coventry City's FA Cup success when they beat Tottenham 3-2 in the final. And now they're one game away from getting back to the FA Cup final. Obviously, Manchester United in the FA Cup final last year lost to their rivals, Manchester City, on that occasion. They'll want to get back there. It's their only chance of anything, really. They're not going to finish in the top four now, Manchester United. And it would kind of be pointless of them knocking Liverpool out if they then go and lose to Coventry in the next round, wouldn't it? So there's a bit of pressure on them. I've seen it build over here that Coventry have got a free hit in that game. That's nonsense. They're never going to get to the FA Cup semi-final, or they're unlikely to get to the FA Cup semi-final again in a hurry in the league position that they're in. So they're going to give this absolutely everything. Do you give them a chance in this one, Craig?
Most certainly. Yes, I saw the game against Wolves, you know, who have been doing well in the Premier League this season, and they were more than a match, and I deserved the victory. And obviously it was a late goal scenario, scoring two goals you know, after 87 minutes, I think it was, after Wolves had just snuck ahead, gone 2-1 ahead. But they were more than a match for their, you know, for their Premier League Midlands rivals that day, and I see the same on Sunday. I can see them really, you know, having an excellent application to their game. I can see them really taking the game to Man United, and we know how frail Man United can be defensively, although obviously particularly dangerous on the counter-attack. Great coach, great manager in Mark Robbins as well. You know, he's brought them up from League Two. I remember playing against Coventry when I was at assisting with the coaching at Newport County in League Two. He took them from League Two through to the Championship, and obviously, you know, the upper echelons of the Championship as well. And he's taken them on his great cup run. So I think they'll be a force to be reckoned with. And yeah, I think that's going to be closer, actually, potentially, than Chelsea Manchester City game.
Yeah, I do too. There's two things I like about Coventry in this game. First of all, sometimes when a Championship side gets to Wembley, they kind of rabbit in headlight situation. They've not been to Wembley before for a while, and, you know, they freeze on the big occasion. Coventry were at Wembley just 11 months ago in the playoff final against Luton, which, as much as I love the FA Cup, that playoff final was a bigger game than this FA Cup semi-final was going to be. And they took that to penalties. They were a penalty kick away from going through to the Premier League. So they're not going to have that situation. Most of that squad is still intact now, so they've got that experience to fall back on. They've also won the playoffs on their way up through the leagues anyway. So they've been to Wembley quite a few times in recent times, sold out that end in next to no time whatsoever. So they've got that on their side. And yeah, where I really like them, their attack. They've got some good attacking players. I mean, Ellis Sims is in absolute brilliant form right now. He was the catalyst of that win at Wolves, as you mentioned. Hadji Wright, American international, he's not too shabby either. He's got some pace to burn, and that's the one thing that you can get at Man United with if you've got pace, particularly if they're a little bit sort of up the pitch, which you would imagine they're going to look to be, wouldn't you, as the Premier League side against the Championship side. I can certainly see Coventry having some joy. Obviously, at the other end, it's just whether they can keep the door shut to the Hoylands and the Garnachos and the Bruno Fernandeses of this world. That's where I wouldn't be at all surprised if this one needs extra time, and who knows, maybe even penalties before this one's decided.
Yeah, absolutely. I can agree with you more. I think providing, you know, they can keep it tight for the first, you know, 30 minutes or so, and find their feet in the game, or even start on the front foot and take the game to Manchester United, then yeah, I think Coventry are definitely going to be a force to be reckoned with.
See them going through? Or do you think United will have too much in the end?
I think the romantic in me says I'd like to see Coventry go through to the final. Manchester United have come good in a couple of performances. But again, you know, as we said previously about Chelsea, so erratic this season. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get from one game to the next. So, yeah, I'm going to go for Coventry. Why not?
Coventry Man City final for Craig. I think United will just have too much in the end. I think they'll I wouldn't be surprised if they need to sneak it very, very late in extra time, or dare I say it, even on a penalty shootout. Surely if it goes to penalties, that's when Coventry will be vulnerable, because the memories of that playoff semi-final will come flooding back where they lost a penalty shootout. That would be my one concern for Coventry. I think they need to get it done. I think they probably need to get it done inside 90 minutes, really. I think the extra fitness of a Manchester United side probably will tell over the course of extra time. I've got it as the same final as last year, Man City, Man United. I hope I'm wrong, because I don't like predictability and, you know, sort of same thing as all the time. But who knows? Two fantastic FA Cup semi-finals in prospect, hot on the heels of that brilliant bottom end clashes in the Premier League. It's a great weekend to look forward to. And if you're going to any of those games, as always, as we always say on the Director's Box podcast, do enjoy it. Be respectful. Obviously, if you're at Wembley and you're going to Wembley for the first time, really enjoy that. It's an incredible arena. Whether the semi-final should be there, that's a different story. Again, we might touch on that in podcast, maybe even next week when we reflect on those semi-finals. But that's almost it for the podcast. What's your weekend looking like, Craig?
Yeah, we've got games this weekend at the club, Kevin. No travelling, thankfully. We've got a home weekend, so I'm very much looking forward to that. But I will be thinking of you at Kenilworth Road against Brentford. And I'll be keeping an eye on that result for you as well, Kevin. But wherever you're watching your football this weekend, folks, you know, enjoy and hope your team is successful.
And myself and Craig will be back next week to look back at all the big bits of the weekend. We'll pick out a huge talking point to discuss as well. And we'll look ahead to the following week, where I'm sure there are plenty of matches to get stuck into, not least the final day of the League Two season, which will be very interesting indeed, as always. So thanks to everyone for listening to the podcast. Thanks, Craig, for your thoughts. And from us both, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
See you next week.